gentlemen, welcome to the French Connections Thursday edition, the 25th day of May 2006. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and of course, we are here to do an interview today with a friend of mine, someone I have come to enjoy talking to both privately and on the radio about a myriad of subjects. We discuss so many important issues on with this gentleman that I ask him back semi-regularly to have his take on the current events that we're all facing. So without any further ado, we'll bring my guest on. His name is Sahib Moskatine Blair, and he is an imam from Britain, and he's my guest today. Sahib, are you with me?
Yes, I am. How are you, Daryl?
Very well, thank you, sir. We had a great conversation today, so I'm going to get right into some of the questions I have. You know, we discussed this awakening that's going on, and both in Europe and in America, and it has happened in spite of, not because of, but in spite of the mainstream media. I'm wondering, you know, what your take is on the growth of the truth, both in your society and what you've been able to glean from looking at the world at large, and what kind of significance this has for all of us.
Well, I can only kind of gauge from what I see around me. And of course, the official media still maintain the official story. There is no change to that. But I think the number of people who do not believe the official story is growing. And that will pose a problem to them, because gradually they will have to kind of pay lip service or accept that an alternative view of what happened is out there. You know, as the old saying goes, I think Maxwell said that, the media tycoon, he said that for a lie to succeed, it has to at least have an element of truth in it. The media can't afford being totally out of touch with people. And if there's a groundswell of opinion that says, no, we don't buy this, then they have to at least present the other side, even if they try to dismiss it, if they try to demolish it, rubbish, ridicule it as conspiracy theories or whatever. But they have to actually give a little bit of freedom to that. And there have been programs like that. I'm sure there have been in the United States. We had the BBC, and the BBC aren't known, to be particularly critical of the establishment. Over here, some time ago, that was, of course, before the bombings in London last July, they ran a program about that the whole issue of terrorism was used to politically frighten people into submission, and that the threat wasn't real. And so they have to kind of give a little bit of they have to admit, let's say, in some way, that people know something.
Yep.
And I think that's the beginning of the unraveling of the official story.
Right. Well, you know, here's what we discussed, too. And I mean, this whole movement away from that official story is going to mean dramatic change. And why? Because everything they did, they hinged it upon the belief that this was going to sell in the public. And in other words, their war was launched on as a result, and so was their assistance to Israel, and so was their next step in Iran. And the lie coming unraveled means so much, doesn't it? I mean, it's not just a regular lie. This is a lie that has changed everyone's lives.
I think it was intended to be a watershed, and I think it was also one of their worst miscalculations. I mean, that's still to be seen. But what happens is that 9/11, in a way, was meant to change an awful lot of things. 9/11 was the catalyst, the traumatic event that would allow them to act unilaterally in the world,
mm-hmm.
allow them to do things people would otherwise not accept, that
right.
Paved the way for the war in Afghanistan, for the war in Iraq, that paved the way for the various repressive laws, the Patriot Act, for example, or the anti-terrorism legislation here in the United Kingdom, that really paved the way for an awful lot of things, and that was the justification. And what they, of course, thought would happen is that it was so traumatic, that it was such a shock, that people would just throw, well, they would go for cover, and they would go behind their government, and they would not question anything. and that this shock would last. And they miscalculated, I think, so badly that in their arrogance they even came out and showed their hands. So the so-called neoconservatives, whom we know are supporters of Israel, whom we know are Zionists, through and through, came out and said, well, we are the ones behind it. They didn't hide the fact anymore that, that a government is led by these what used to be shadowy figures from behind. They came out of the closet, they came out in the open. And by doing so, by showing their color, it indicated that they thought that really they had won the day. There was no going back, that everything was now going their way and there would be no more opposition. And now we are some, well, 3.5 years later in a position where they are increasingly on the defensive, where increasingly they have to justify their position, where they've had one inquiry that didn't satisfy anybody, where there are more calls about what is happening. And I think it's important. It's important for us, with what you're doing on your show and other people, to focus on 9/11 and not be sidetracked to something else. And the reason why it's important, in my view, is that 9/11 as this event that was meant to actually change the whole structure of the way we are governed, of the way society is run, of the way globally they are acting. If it can be shown to have been a lie, if it can be shown that what happened is different from what we were told that happened, then of course the whole credibility, the whole edifice falls apart like a pack of cards. And once that happens, I think it will have immense consequences. It would be the first time that the official propaganda is actually removed by what people discover for themselves.
Well, see, now there are a lot of people jockeying to be the voice that's heard, to be the news that's read and the information that's accepted. And of course, you and I both know that because the mainstream media has largely been absent in this battle, they've pitched their tent on the lie. So basically, the battle's being fought in my area of broadcast, in my area of investigation, and they would not let that area go uncontrolled. So they've flooded this particular area with their own people, and they've done it in America, by and large, with these false truth movements and false 9/11 truth groups. And what we've been able to find out is they're almost entirely populated with Jewish people. Now, again, I always make this caveat that not all Jews are involved in any of this. I mean, this is a select group of people, either by their belief system or by payment, is fighting their fight for them. But not all Jews are involved. Now, the ones that are, and we've gone through the lists before, but they are almost exclusively the ones that are getting a voice in America right now. And you know, my show has almost no links to it, Sahib. When you go to the internet to find me, almost no other website links to my show, because we're not in the fold.
Yes, Darrell, I know exactly what you're saying, and I think you're probably right on that. But it does not at this stage concern me too much, and I tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is always a danger that a particular movement gets kind of hijacked by the very people that it once set out to expose.
Yeah.
That has happened throughout history. I mean, you can go as far back as when the Romans, who persecuted Christianity, suddenly became the upholders of Christianity and changed it completely.
Mm-hmm.
We see now attempts of commercializing Islam, where you have so-called Islamic banks offering you a particular interest rate, and they even have the audacity to publish their interest rate for what they call an interest-free Islamic loan. It's really going mad, and these things do happen. But in this particular instance, I'm not too worried about it, because this is something else. This is not a a set of beliefs. This is not a movement. This is not an ideology that could be hijacked and converted. This is simply a realization by ordinary people that they've been lied to, that they've been manipulated, and once they realize that and said, we've had enough, no matter what you tell them after that, that's not going to go away. So what I'm saying here is that, yes, they may think that admitting that 9/11 wasn't this hijack that was organized from a cave somewhere in the Afghan mountains by a guy on a dialysis machine who now and then sends new audio tapes from beyond the grave, you know. It was actually something else that people realized. It couldn't have happened without the collusion, without the approval of the American military, of the American air traffic control, of the American airport security system, and so on and so forth, that these buildings couldn't have come down the way they did without this actually being a controlled demolition, and so on and so forth, that steel doesn't melt just from a bit of kerosene going up in flames, most of it outside the building. When you look at all these things and people realize that they've been seriously lied to because their government has been in cohort with the people who sacrificed their own population in order to pursue an agenda, then those people don't care at all whether afterwards somebody wants to sell them a fib here or there. You can't put that cat back in the bag, and I think they're badly miscalculating. So it's good for us. I'd rather let them do that job, because you might reach 10,000-20,000 people, and they might reach 10-20 times that number. Once the people have understood they've been lied to, then you have people there whom you can also tell what you know and take them a step further, but their eyes have already been opened. They're no longer blind. You can talk to them and they understand what you're saying, whereas until now, they're just so in disbelief about it that they can't be. Impossible. My government wouldn't do that. So I think it's a positive development. I'm not too worried about them trying to hide their tracks.
And well, what do you think? I got a question.
Once people open their eyes, they're going to ask questions anyway.
Well, what do you think? I got a question about this. We know airport security at Logan International in Boston was run by an Israeli company that was actually started by the founder's children of the Mossad, and they also control Schiphol Airport and Gatwick. And we also know that Frank Lowy was a part controller of the World Trade Center 3 months before. In other words, my point being that in almost every instance, to a man, the people involved in this were Jewish Zionists. Now, we also know that those same people are in control of our fiat money system. And we also know that they're in control of our media. What is it we're going to do when Judgment Day comes for this group in the world? How are we going to manage, and what do you see coming as a result of people waking up? Because, listen, we'll juxtapose these facts onto these criminals and end up demanding our pound of flesh. And what's going to happen to our money system? What will happen to media? What will happen to international corporatism?
There is no doubt. I usually go from a different corner without just going from the individual instances and then deducting. I ask the question, who benefits? And there is no doubt in my mind that there is a Zionist agenda behind this. And they know that this system is going to self-destruct. They know that the artificial interest-based money system is not going to last. They know that they can't carry on like this forever. But what they want to do, they have followed an agenda of destroying independence of companies. They all bought up. Today we had to talk about Eurotunnel, between France and England, being so much in debt that the banks will eventually take it over. They have destroyed companies and they have destroyed nations. They have made sure that everything is kind of put together in a big syndicates that they control. Eventually, what they want is world government. There is no doubt that, and it has to be spelled out quite clearly, that
yep.
this is what they are after. They're after world government, and they know that when the whole thing comes falling apart, they have to get repressive. They have to force their way through because people won't go for it willingly. At the moment, they kind of selling them globalization. They're selling them the dream of owning your own home with a mortgage when, in fact, all you do is have the illusion of ownership and you pay your rent to the bank. They're selling you all kinds of stuff and trying to entice you into giving up your freedoms or trying to threaten you and make you fear terrorism so you give up your freedom. But eventually, they have to go and come and force it. And this is where the crunch comes, and you wonder, well, will people just take it lying down, or won't they? And I don't think they will take it lying down, because once it has been exposed, not as a benevolent force, but as a devilish force that is trained to control us, and that is a quite elitist and superiorist and racist ideology. I think people are not going to accept it. But we also must, on the other hand, be careful that we don't lump everybody together. Because that's just what they would want to do, that they say, well, yeah, Jewish and you anti-Semitic and you just don't like the Jews and all that kind of nonsense. There are lots of Jews who have looked through it and said, you don't talk in our name and this is not in our benefit. The religious Jews, the Orthodox, some of the Orthodox Jews, some of the anti-Zionist Jews have come out quite clearly and said, well, we can't support
these kind of policies.
And we have to make it clear that there is a difference. We're not talking about ordinary people down in the street. We're talking about a power elite who are Jewish, most of them, who are Zionists. Those who are not Jewish still work. I mean, Condoleezza Rice is not Jewish, but she works for the same cabal, and so on. You know, we have to make it clear.
Yes,
that
but Sahib, here's what I did today, and you know this, Sahib, by reading my post on, and I came out strong about something because we've had a problem of infiltration and obfuscation and confusing the issues from this particular group of hired guns, as it were, or henchmen, if you will, from the Jewish community in the 9/11 movement that has scooped up a lot of our efforts and really destroyed a great amount of our work. Now, in order to place this fight firmly on its feet, I decided to make a statement, and the statement I think was fair, because, in other words, if you knew, let's say, that Britain had been attacked by Chinese, for example, and that they were 2% of Britain's population, and you said, okay, the Chinese were behind a conspiracy to destroy London or something, and then 2 years into the event, all of a sudden 75% of your researchers happened to be Chinese, you would scratch your head and say, excuse me, what happened to the other 59.8 million Brits?
Of course you would.
And you would say, this makes no sense to me. And of course, when you started looking at their positions, you would say, they're not here to forward truth, but rather to obfuscate. And for sake of clarity, I'm asking them to be supportive of us, both financially and with your cheering, saying, go get them, but to step aside and let others do it so that this can be done without...
It's like when Israel was established. You know, in the Second World War, and the Zionist World Congress colluded with the Nazis. They worked together.
Yes, they did.
You know, it was quite clear that they didn't mind sacrificing their own people.
That's right.
In fact, we have some of them on record saying that anti-Semitism is a good thing because it creates an atmosphere where they can pose as being victimized all the time, and then they get away with what they're doing. So we must be careful that this kind of climate doesn't develop, where people don't feel they have to take it out on their Jewish cabbie next to them or something. It has to be a lot more sophisticated.
Well, my statement that I made today, I would like, I mean, I was very clear. Mm-hmm. In my interest of not, I wrote, Smith does not believe all Jews were involved. And he says, but until we determine who to trust, we should not allow the criminal element of Jews to interfere with our investigating. And I think that that's a fair thing, especially based upon... Well, what do you think? Do you think that was a fair approach?
Yeah, I think I need to say this again. Where I think at this moment, I am happy for anybody to help demolish the 9/11 official propaganda myth. I'm happy for anybody to do that, no matter what their agenda, because once people have understood that what we've been sold there is not true, and that we've been lied to, and that we've been manipulated, then we can move another step, and people will automatically ask, and why did they lie to us? And who lied to us? And in whose interest did they lie to us? So this is the second step, and I think this is very different from what we've seen before, because we've had, let me give you the analogy of, we had the Kennedy assassination, and people said, yeah, well, there is something foul, there is something not quite right, there is a cover-up going on, but then they get on with their lives and say, so what? I mean, what's it to me whether these guys up there in their limousines and in their executive lifestyles, you know, it happens. I just get on with my life. Likewise, here in Britain, we had Diana in an accident in France. Well, no, many people say she's been taken out because she became too much of an embarrassment, and even if she was pregnant at the time, to the royal family. And then people say, yeah, a lot of people don't believe that it was just an accident, but they say, well, yeah, well, the royals do things like that, don't they? And I'm not a royal, so it's really, that's their life, this is my life, I keep out of it. But this is something different. 9/11 is not what happens amongst the royal family. 9/11 is not what happens in the executive floors of some company or at the upper level of government. 9/11 is something that affects every man, woman, and child, because it's being used as a justification for policies that we all suffer from. And so 9/11, if people realize that this wasn't like it was made out to be, they're not going to move on with their life and walk away and say, so who cares, what does it matter, I got children to bring up, I've got to feed them and clothe them, and I've got to pay my rent. No, they will say, no, there is something seriously wrong, and we mustn't allow that to happen. It will turn round, and then what they're going to do? Either they have to make a runner with their tails between their legs, which is unlikely, or they have to go for a confrontation, like martial law, like putting in tight controls, the government against the people. And I think we're really moving on to a quite different scenario in that respect. And therefore, coming back to what I said, I don't care who opens people's eyes about that this has been a lie. I don't care who does it, as long as they see it for themselves. Because once you have a certain level of people, a critical mass being reached, where these people, a lot of people just follow. Once the majority of the opinion leaders no longer buys the propaganda, then the rest will follow with their opinion. Because, you and I can look into it in detail. A lot of people say, I don't know, what does he say? He's always right on that. And somebody asks and say, well, ask their dad, ask their uncle, or ask somebody at work and say, what do you think about that? And they make up their mind according to what somebody else thinks. But if those opinion leaders have come round to see through the official smokescreen lies, I think then we're in for a change. And then the whole ball game is going to change. And in that sense, I'm pretty optimistic. I don't think there is any need to be despondent, because the signs are that people are waking up in that respect.
Well, for somebody like myself who's so far out ahead of the curve, it's painfully slow, and of course, by historical standards, it's quite quick, in fact. So, I mean, I have to look at it rationally and understand that, you know, if I want it on my timetable, I'm going to be frustrated. But if I want it on a historical timeline, that in fact, in 3.5-4 years, we've made tremendous progress toward
it. It is incredible in that.
It is incredible.
I think if they had another chance, they would not let the Internet get into the hands of ordinary people. Because this way of communicating, of exchanging information, really has allowed people to bypass the official channels, and so it's so much more difficult to control. And I think everything is moving pretty fast. And yes, if you look, as you said, in historical terms, then dynasties rise and fall. They become over-assertive. They become decadent. They overstretch themselves, and then they kind of collapse. But it would take decades or even centuries. And now the whole thing is really being played out in front of our eyes an awful lot quicker. But I think we need to be also ready for whatever might happen, because they're not going to go quietly. I often use that analogy of a fish out of water. When a fish is out of water, it's not going to last very long. It's really breathing its last, but it's going to flap pretty hard. And if you don't stand back, if it's a big fish, you know, you're going to get whacked.
I like
this
that.
Is what we're facing, you know.
Well, no, I'm a fisherman. I like that analogy very much. now here's a question for you. You know,
you're catching them. You're catching them, but you mustn't let them get slip away back in the water, and you must be careful that they don't hit you until they've exhausted themselves. So we've got to be careful. We've got to look after our own people as well. We mustn't sort of divide ourselves. We must be not fall for some ploy of diverting us or setting us up against each other. And there are various methods that they use in order to achieve that. I mean, look at Iraq, for example, at the moment. They faced an opposition that they did not count on. So what did they do? And there is increasing evidence for that the Americans actually, in order to kind of phase off opposition that was aimed against them, started setting people up against each other, started creating sectarian strife, started the Sunni against Shia, Shia against Sunni clashes by orchestrating some carefully planned events. And if people fight each other, they're not going to fight the occupier. So we've got to be very careful that they don't use that kind of strategy on us.
Well, you know, let's move over to Iran for a moment. And, you know, my research has told me there are some elements that are similar to the Dunmar in Iran, and that there are people there who probably, for one reason or another, historically or otherwise, have some allegiances that are not with the Iranian people, per se.
I think you've got to first explain to people who the Dunmar are. The Dunmar are...
Well, my listeners know the Dunmar.
They know the Dunmar, do they? They know the Salonika Jews who first
yes.
sabotaged CV. They know all that. And
yes, and they also know that they brought down the Ottoman Empire by becoming well-placed within the hierarchy, both by lending the...
Well-informed audience, I must say, because a lot of people haven't got a clue about that.
Well, they not only that, they know that they did it with their financing, because, of course, the caliph or the leader of that empire needed, money at hand. And so he turned to these people, and of course these people clandestinely had been financed through the Jewish bankers. Now, what we find here in Iran, on the other hand, is that the Shia movement may well have been established by clandestine, what we call crypto-Jews. Now, crypto-Zionist would not be the right term, because Zionism is a newer form of this same sickness, but I'm wondering if the elements within Iran that are maybe poking the eye of the West in order to stir up trouble, maybe they're inviting in this catastrophe in some way. I wonder sometime.
I don't buy this one. I don't buy it. There are Jews in Iran. They are living quite well there. They are not persecuted as one would want to make.
But how about clandestine Jews? Cryptos.
Well, I don't actually see the development of the Shia part of the Islamic belonging in a similar line as the Dönme in Turkey. The Shia-Sunni conflict is a historic conflict that goes back to the times when, after the death of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, some of the area went back to Arab nationalism, where there was a conflict, political conflict, power struggle, which came to a boil between the supporters of the fourth caliph of Islam, Ali, and Muawiyah, who was at the time asserting his authority, and that split goes back all that time, and there is no Jewish interference and involvement. I'm not saying that not certain groups try to take advantage of some conflict and play it to their benefit, and I'm not saying that they're not sometimes behind, like certain events, like, let's say, there is a revolution in a country and they back the right party so that they get into positions of power themselves. They've done that with the French Revolution. They've done that also.
They did it with Anwar Sadat.
Revolution.
They did it with Anwar Sadat in Egypt.
Yes, indeed. But I don't think that present-day Iran fits that category. And I don't think they're inviting a kind of interference or showdown. I think it's quite a different situation. And the rhetoric coming out of Iran, whilst it's not particularly refined all the time, is a different one, because it doesn't play by the established rules. Nobody who is controlled, for example, by the Jews, would dare to try and demolish the currency of the Holocaust, for example, as Ahmadinejad did when he responded to this cartoon crisis. Nobody would do that, because this is their lifeblood to on the victimization status get for themselves concessions that others would not get. So no, I don't buy that particular scenario, really.
Mm.
What I am more concerned about, really, because Iran, yes, it is regionally important, and it is probably important with regard to what is America going to do next. And it is important strategically for Israel, but if you look a little bit further, because we are in the middle of the making of history, I'm more concerned about when the American Empire kind of breathes its last, who is going to fill the gap? And people look, for example, to China, and you will find that the Rothschild banking family already have set up banking operations in China.
Yes, in fact, they were the first bank.
Yes,
they were the first bank given a license to trade within China from the outside.
And this is more worrying to me, because what they're saying here is, well, yeah, one empire goes and one dynasty dies and another one is in the ascendancy, and we can just switch sides. Who cares? Like the arms dealers always supply both sides, don't they? And the money launderers do the same thing. And this is what worries me a little bit more, that they simply shift. Like they did shift from Amsterdam to Great Britain with the Cromwell's silent revolution.
That's right.
They can just do that because it's all a financially based power. The power does not rest in buildings and armies, and it really rests in controlling the purse strings. So I'm a little bit more concerned about the long-term planning, where we might win a battle, but they still they're looking at the whole war and say, well, who cares?
It's important that
there is an exposé of what is happening. That people are aware this is about world government. People are aware that this is meant to be an international court of justice in Jerusalem. People are aware that this is that the financial control is the tool to absolute political control and oppression. That people are aware that communism and capitalism are two sides of the same coin, because a lot of people don't quite understand that. And there are these false battles being fought. And that people are aware that, that Islam is so much an eyesore for them simply because it doesn't fit in that pattern. It refuses to succumb. And whilst there are many Muslim regimes or regimes, puppet regimes put in place over Muslim countries who do succumb to those controllers, ordinary believers don't. And that reformation of Islam that they want, changing the Quran, making it irrelevant, you know, preaching homosexuality as acceptable in Islam, saying that this and that should be done to change Islam and bring it in line with the modern world and all that nonsense, that people just don't buy. People say, no, you can't change the Quran. We won't let you, and we won't buy it, and we won't have it, and our loyalty is to that first and to nothing else. And that's why Islam is the enemy for them. Not because the Muslim countries are powerful, not because they have nuclear arms or weapons of mass destruction, but because they are armed with a faith that, that these people can't penetrate.
Well, let's look for a minute at Islam. They've got control of the leadership of Morocco. They've got control of the leadership with Bouteflika of Algeria. They've got Libya come on board with Gaddafi starting to acquiesce. They've got Mubarak in Egypt. They've got Sudan now coming onto line. They've got Jordan bought and paid for. They've got Iraq in shambles. They've got Turkey under their control. They've got Saudi Arabia bought and paid for. Look at these, I just almost named every country in North Africa and the Middle East. And the simple fact of the matter is that in every instance, their regime, their top of their of this organization, has been usurped by these people.
They're running Al Qaeda as their own operation.
That's right. Al Qaeda is a false flag.
But you know, Daryl, Islam is not in the leadership. Islam is in the hearts and minds of ordinary people. And they have to have them under a tight system. They have to keep the lid on it, because otherwise it will be uncontrollable. They don't want democracy in Egypt. They don't want a say for the people in Saudi Arabia, because they know that this is something that would not go in their favor. But. You know, it's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time when these people will demand to have a say. And this is what they're worried about. This is what they are preparing for. This is where they want to have permanent bases in the region. This is where they want to decimate them as well and bomb them back into the Dark Ages. This is where they want to destroy their infrastructure. Look at Iraq, was one of the most educated countries in the Middle East. It was. It had the best scientists. It had the best physicians. And yes, there were good Muslims there, and they were persecuted and put down by Saddam Hussein, who was a stooge for the Americans. But they know that ultimately those people couldn't be controlled, so they destroyed their infrastructure, they destroyed their education system, with the depleted uranium, they destroyed their heritage, they destroyed them for generations. They're not going to raise their head for some time. So this is genocide.
It is genocide.
And they have to do that because they are not afraid of the leaders of the Muslim countries, because they're all in their pocket. They are afraid of the Muslim masses. But there is no way, there is absolutely no way that they're going to win that one.
Well, you know, we're looking, I'm looking over here, I from my own example, okay. Brussels, of course, leading Europe right now, is just a basic form of tyranny. And let me give you an example where I live. I live in an agricultural region, and of course, France used to make its own rules for its agricultural products. No longer does it. It gets its rules meted out from Brussels, including that you can't use raw milk for your cheese, or you can't use this kind of animal, or you can't. And here in the French countryside, what they've done basically is bankrupt or almost destroy rural life. They have They have upended every single quality that the rural life once held, and now they're destroying the economic future of this area by decree. And there's very little the French feel they can do to stop it.
Well, they do that because they don't want anybody to have self-sufficiency. We eat sheep here that come from New Zealand, and we grow sheep here that we export to somewhere else. We buy shoes from Italy or now from the Far East, and everything is made interdependent. So people, if anybody pulls the plug on any country, they can't survive because they haven't got a functioning economy anymore. And this is where the danger is.
Yep.
And this is where really we have to look back into how can we build communities, because as individuals we all weak. As individuals we all helpless. There is not much we can do. So we have to build communities. And of course, yes, those traditional, the farming communities, the rural communities were the ones with the strongest cohesion. In the cities where people just go to work in a factory or something, they don't have that same kind of sense of belonging. They come from different places. In the rural communities, that still have the strongest cohesion. And that is something that has been persistently under attack for many years because that does make the backbone of a country. If you look at the Second World War, from what I know from stories my parents and grandparents told me, I mean, I wasn't around then, but it was the farmers who managed to A, survive, and B, help others to survive.
Yeah.
Even if they just gave them a few potato peels, but they did have the potatoes, and they could give them the potato peels. But if there is no farmers, and then that is no longer an option.
Yeah.
So when you destroy the agricultural backbone of a country, when you destroy, like they have done over the last couple of decades, the manufacturing base of countries, when you destroy and leave only the kind of administrative and financial sectors intact, which are open to manipulation and which are no real wealth creators, then a country really is nothing.
I agree with that, and I'm watching it happen here. And so many have attempted to bring in France here, they've still got a very militant rural community, and I mean this is a country of villages, and because they've decimated the quality of life of these villages, people are angry, and it's hard for anybody to get any traction on what the facts are. I've tried, and others have, and we've got people like Josie Beauvais and the rest of them, and what we do know is that they're succeeding by and large to implement this Brussels agenda across Europe, and it's killing the European nation state, destroying culture, and making us subservient, and really victimizing us. And I'm wondering what your take is in Britain as far as what's happening with this same situation.
I think it's happening across the board, but people bear with it because they don't have an alternative. But at the same time, they resent it. And that resentment is important, even though it's not expressed at this moment either politically or through action.
Mm-hmm.
What that resentment means is that come the time, those people will back the right horse.
Yep.
What do I mean by that? I mean, you see, they feel they haven't got much they can do. They can't stand up to their own government. They know their own government is selling them out. They can't really do much about it. There's no point going to the in elections to put a cross against any name because they're all in the same pocket. So people become cynical about it and just resign themselves to their fate, but they don't like it. And come the point where there is something, where the government is weakened or where there is an action, they will ensure that they add their voice to it. So they're just sitting it out and wait. People don't lose their pride.
So what you're saying is we could be entering, Sahib, if I get you right, what we've talked about from the beginning of this conversation is we may be entering a period of the perfect storm. where you see the lie that has taken civil liberties away, the lie that has destroyed economic security, the lie that has taken away individual rights and individual choice. These kinds of things are may well all gel at the same moment for by the same single event, and it could explode at any time.
Well, what I think is happening is that for the last couple of decades, people have seen so much change in their own lives, it's frightening for them.
Yep.
They no longer have job security. The unions don't have any say anymore. Technology has turned their lives around. They more and more in debt. They have no longer any certainty about even their pension. The basic principles they held dear don't hold true anymore. Morality has disappeared in society. You don't know what to believe anymore, what is right, what is wrong. You don't feel secure anymore. So people are confused, people are worried, people are concerned, and they can't put their finger on it. So this is not a good state to be in. But
no.
It only takes something that makes them understand how it all fits together, and the whole thing flips.
Well, you and I both know how it fits together, and see, here's the problem.
If we can manage to make them understand that actually what is being played, that this is not all happening like some freak of nature or by some accident or because it's inevitable or divine ordinance. This is happening because somebody is actually wanting it to happen.
Yep.
Once people realize that they are at the receiving end of this manipulation and that they part in somebody's power game, gosh, this is going to be something else. People will not take it lying down.
Well, I agree with you, and here this has been my hope that, see, it's not going to come free of terrible suffering, sadly, and the human, you know, of course, everybody that fights these kind of battles, and there are many of us out here doing it, yourself and me, myself, Eric, and many others. My hope would be that we don't have to carry terrible suffering along with us in the battle. But I don't see any way of avoiding it at this point. I mean, when the thing finally does ignite and erupt, there are going to be winners and losers, and the losers are going to lose in a terrible way.
Well, I think it's very important that we put out the information and make it reach as many people as possible. So
mm-hmm.
when they have to make a choice, they know which choice to make. They know whose side they are on. And you know, a lot of people are kind of dismissive about the silent majority. But the silent majority has a habit of speaking out sometimes, not always, at the right time and making its voice heard. And this is what we have to wait for. And we can help it along by feeding them the information that helps them make up their mind. If we can... And I think it's happening. I think it's happening that this manipulation where they thought they have total control over their people's minds, where they use mind control rather than physical control, where instead of having a police state, they have a propaganda state.
Mm-hmm.
They're beginning to realize that this is falling apart, that it is not working. And when they want to return to the police state, I think people are going to say enough is enough, because they've tasted a certain measure of freedom. They've tasted a certain measure of liberty, of being able to say what you want.
Well, you know, I'm Emmanuel Goldstein, and I've awoken to the lie.
Yes.
And what do we do when you're this guy, when you're Goldstein, who's awakened to the lie, and the eyeball is watching you? And you see, you know, some of the most painful things that I see, and this is the destruction of beauty. And I want to bring up this point because, you know, you being an imam and everything, I think you probably want to speak to these kinds of issues as well. My personal love in life is wonderful music and kind events and beautiful things. I like to paint pictures, and I like to do things that are really bring beauty to the world. And these people have placed on our television screens and on our music boxes the most horrendous and hideous and sickening images and sickening musics. I mean, yeah. you look at our this rap stuff with the gold-toothed gangster-type sickos with prostitute-looking women and some of the most vile kinds of programming on television. It saddens
Actually,
me.
I don't have a television.
Well, I don't watch
I know
it either.
What you're talking about.
Well, see. But see, you're not the majority here.
No, I'm not the majority. But you know, there are, we have a prophetic saying that says Allah, meaning God, is beauty and loves the beautiful. Now, beauty is something that where things are in harmony. And harmony, when you create harmony, you're building something, you construct it. And it's almost an act of worship. And of course, ugliness is what destroys pulls people apart, what demoralizes them, what puts them down. So yes, it's part of the programming to actually destroy what makes people feel good about themselves, and to actually make them feel bad and frustrated instead. But I don't think the human condition allows for that ultimately to succeed. 1984 by Orwell ends on a sad note in that they actually managed, but I don't think they will ever manage. This is where I'm a believer. I don't think they will ever manage to control people to the degree where truth is only what they say, where nobody has any independent feeling anymore, where nobody can verify things for themselves, where nobody can probe their own soul and heart about whether something is right or wrong. I don't think that will happen.
Well, it has at some level already happened. I mean, look, you know, they're foisting upon young people the idea that same sex sexual activity is perfectly normal, and then when they do, is they make it a popular activity. And of course, children are actually finding their way to this kind of behavior.
Let's see how much they have to push it, because it's like advertising, isn't it? If they didn't push it, it'll die a natural death. You know, it's like if you have a particular washing powder brand, you have to every week tell the woman that this one is the best and washes the whitest, because if you don't, she'll pick up any washing powder from the supermarket shelf, because really they're all the same. So you have to kind of keep the propaganda going. If you don't keep the propaganda going, it all disappears very quickly. And from that we know that it's false, that it's artificial, that it's not real. And at the moment it disappears, the constant bombardment with the propaganda, a normal equilibrium establishes itself again. So I'm not too worried about it there, because they're going to run out of steam, and people will not naturally side, you know, for what is wrong. I'm a great believer in the natural potential of people to given enough time and opportunity to figure out what is right. There's always some who exploit, but there is.
So you're not a cynic.
No. Sometimes yes, but ultimately no. If you lose, and I think we mustn't ever allow that to happen. If you lose faith in humanity, then what are we fighting for? What's the point?
You're right. But you know, see, I got to tell you something. From my sitting at my desk, I fight this battle every day, Sahib. You know that. I'm on this 24/7 and making my effort. And there is a point where, you know, being enveloped in some of the sickest stuff you could imagine. I mean, just read the news, read the cycles. It does take its toll.
It does, and it's very disturbing, but sometimes things get worse before they get better.
Yeah.
But you know, I think they've got pretty bad. I don't think they can get an awful lot worse before they have to get better. I think it's important to do two things. One is to inform people about what is really going on, so they can see clearly, because without somebody interpreting it for them, without somebody showing them, they don't understand what is going on, because they're not attuned to it. And the other is to appeal to their basic sentiment of decency, of mutual respect, those values that people are longing for, but they've seen them kind of disappear in front of their eyes. People don't know how to go back to them, but they do want it. You ask people, they're not happy with what they're being sold.
They think
they almost idealize some things that no longer exist, you know, like family life you know, there's a lot of stuff. People are longing for a change, and that longing for a change is important because what we're waiting for is the opportunity for them to actually express that. So the time will come where they will have to make a choice, and if they understand, you see, that's why they put so much effort into trying to write us off as lunatics, as conspiracy theorists. They write us off as hate mongers. They write us off as terrorists, as whatever, you know, so that people won't listen to us. Because they're scared that if they listen to us, they actually figure out, hey, what this man's saying isn't all that bad. I can resonate with that. It makes sense. Maybe he's right. Let's listen more. This is what, you know, this is what they're worried about. So we've got to keep at it, because once people then understand that actually they've been lied to, they're not going to listen to another lie after that.
I think you're right, and you know what I plan on doing is what we've just done now on a regular basis, whether it be monthly or not. I hope I can have you back, and we can rehash and rediscuss current events as well as important events, because you know, Saeed, in order to keep this thing fresh for people, you need to represent even the same facts over again, and because sometimes people need either reassurance or they need reintroduction. And it might get a little bit trying to rehash some of the same old thing all the time, but by the same token, I think we're going to see a shifting under our feet rather soon, because this is going to cascade on them, I believe, and it's going to happen maybe in months, not years. I think we've come to a tipping point here, and I'm wondering what your take is on that.
Well, you're right. I think we're coming to a tipping point soon, but I think we must realize that a lot has happened, not just of the negative stuff that dominates the headlines, but a lot of positive stuff has happened as well. The millions of people who protested against the Iraq war couldn't prevent the war, but nonetheless, they were millions of people who protested against the Iraq invasion. And those were people who never went on a demonstration before. Those weren't the old protest people. Those were people who felt strongly about it, strongly enough to travel and to join the ranks and march when they'd never done so before in their life. That is something qualitatively quite different. And I see it also, for example, that there is a return after we had many years of the students and people at school kind of felt they had to shut up and be quiet and not get involved with politics. There is a return to those that younger generation feeling strongly about issues and saying we've got to tackle issues. And they don't always know which issues to tackle, but they want to do something. They are disillusioned with the official political process, and they want to do something else, and they want to do it themselves. But, of course, being young, they don't have the experience, they don't have the knowledge, they don't have the insights, and so they may do stupid things, and they may do it wrong, but importantly, they want to do something, they want to set things right, and that, again, is a good sign for me. And what we need to do is try and link up people, so those with the experience can pass it on without being patronizing, and those without the experience can take from it and then run with it the way they want to, because after all, it's their world as well, and you know, they're going to inherit it. So I think there is a lot happening. I think the tide is slowly turning. And yes, for people like you and me, it's been slow coming, and it's been awfully frustrating. And you think, how often do I have to say the same thing over again? And will it ever change? And you know, you think nothing's gonna, and deja vu, and we've been there before, and can it get worse than that? But I think with 9/11, with these things speeding up, and with the American administration showing their hands, and the neocons behind it, with all this coming out into the open, I think something, there is the German philosopher Fichte, he, he said, and I can't quote it exactly, but it's a little bit like the match in a dark room. You light it, you know, the darkness is gone. Even a little match can do that. He said that the great consolation for people who love truth and humanity is that truth has the capacity to overcome falsehood, that falsehood has already lost when it's forced out into the light of the open. And I think they have been forced out into the open. There is an open discussion, an open showdown, and I think by that standard, they have lost the game.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think it's just a matter of time. And, Saeed, I want to thank you for taking this time with my listeners and myself to share your thoughts here today on this programming. You know, we do this one show at a time. We do it one day at a time. And I don't always have a great guest who has the knowledge that you do, and it's a pleasure for me to meander around subject matter like we did today. For me, is a pleasure because there aren't that many people I get to do this with that have the same level of understanding that you've got, and so it's been a pleasure. And what I will do is give you a standing invitation for sometime, possibly next month, to bring up a new list of subjects if you've got the time.
I'd be pleased to do so. I think yes, we got to revisit this, and I think something is gathering, and it's great to be part of it.
Yeah, it is. And I want to thank you again for coming on The French Connection. Ladies and gentlemen, Saeed Moscatine Blair, Imam, you can go and find his information at theflyingimam.com, or you can go to my website at iamthewitness.com, and you will find this interview as well as a connection to his website if you wish. And until the next time, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling everyone, be well, and bye-bye.